responsibility is to make this place great again.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
Let her rip!
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, we are going to let her rip, to quote our man Les Miles on the Brennan Sorsby issue. But hey, it's Thursday night in the big town. How are you doing on this Thursday as we get rolling into a World Cup weekend?
I'm doing good. Yeah, you just accidentally burst my eardrums out. Sometimes my daughter likes to come in here. I get my stuff set up back in her playroom so I don't disturb her while she sleeps. And she likes to play on my soundboard and play the music. I just listened to my I Think We're Going 3-9 song about 20 minutes ago. It holds up, by the way. Absolute banger. But she cranks the knobs all the way up on the volume so that she can just have the headset out playing and she can dance to the music. And then I forget to turn it down whenever I come sit down. And then you do your intro and it just blasts my head. So, yes, other than that, I'm doing great. It's World Cup season. Basketball last night made me feel things. Oh. Carson, I love when sports make me feel things. And I was feeling things last night. I've got a buddy who lives in New York, diehard Knicks fan. Guy I worked with it at Golf Channel. And we were texting last night. And I'm like, just so you know, the Knicks are the Thunder. Oklahoma City is New York. We are one. I told him we might build an OG statue outside our new arena. That's how serious this is. Every Knick win feels like a Thunder win.
The enemy of the enemy is my friend, and that's the New York Knicks. I posted that on – that was making the rounds on Instagram. It was like orange and blue kind of Instagram post. So obviously, Thunder and Knicks both orange and blue. So I love that. And just – it's really amazing to me, Colby – I can't tell you how many times you've texted me about some wild finish to a Thunder game. Either Shea is going ballistic or it could be a World Series game. The most incredible games happen when I'm not watching. It's like clockwork. If I watch, it's a 30-point blowout for Wembanyama, and I have to sit through that nonsense and that ninny that he is. Or if I don't watch, it becomes like a Thunder 72-point second half comeback down 30. It's amazing because I didn't even know the comeback happened until my dad texted me like 12 thumbs up emojis. And then you texted me like 3 seconds later saying, I'm so happy right now. So I guess I just don't need to watch and just go back and watch the highlights.
Yeah, to be fair, I turned it off well before halftime. I turned it off at like... I think Dylan Harper hit a three to make it like 57-34. And I was like, I'm not wasting. We had just put Layla to bed. I'm like, I'm not wasting my night watching this crap. But I keep tabs on my phone because I'm like, okay, if a comeback starts to happen, I need to see it. So I tuned back in with probably 6 or 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter, watched the ending, and then I rewound it after the game to the start of the fourth quarter and watched the entire quarter all the way through. Carson, as you get older and, you know, having covered sports and stuff like that, like, I'm just asking for moments in sports that really make me feel something. And it was an all-timer last night. It was so cool. It would have been a heartbreaker if the Spurs had won, but it's just, yeah, it was so, so cool.
And it's just rare on that stage to see something that's never happened before. I believe the Spurs are the first team in any NBA game ever, regardless of playoffs, finals, any game ever, to score at least like 76 and then only score like 30 in the second half. I don't know the exact numbers there, but it had never been done.
76 and 30, yeah.
76 and 30, okay, yeah. And so the NBA has been playing basketball for a very, very, very long time. And so, like, that's why we tune in, man, to see kind of crazy things. And I'm going to hold Chris's University spirit. There's a tie-in here that we'll hold until one of our items here we have here on the rundown. So that's a tease, they call in the TV business, but let's just get right to it though, in terms of, you know, kind of the story of the off season, story of the college football year, really moving forward, the ramifications from the Texas Tech, Brennan Sorsby, what I'm calling a fiasco. If you're watching us on YouTube, Colby, I think by now everyone watching this knows the deal. He bet what, $90,000 worth of bets when he was a member of the Indiana team and Cincinnati, and just Texas Tech somehow, some way, got a local judge in Lubbock County to absolve him of this, or really, you know, to support this injunction or whatever. And his court date's in February, so legally he can play football this year. And of course, that just opens up Pandora's box. It opened up the floodgates from people from the Big 12 saying, we're not even going to play Texas Tech. Even Georgia was coming out. Nebraska's coming out. Texas Tech has literally made themselves the pariah of college athletics, much less college football. And there's a lot of elements to unpack here, Colby, but I think just off the top, for me, it opens up the floodgates not only for players to gamble on their own team, but for me, it opens up the floodgates to literally, you can break any rule. You can bring back players who are seemingly playing professional football right now, or basketball, whatever sport you want to name, and just file a motion with a local court to get an injunction, and they have to let you play for at least a year. To me, it just horrible precedent. Tech's handled this even worse, but that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, Tech has handled it disastrously. It's like, is it really worth it? Is it worth the value he is going to provide at that position to have everyone unanimously across collegiate athletics hate you forever? It is everyone. Dude, Georgia and Nebraska had their athletic directors come out on day one and say, we are done with Texas Tech. If you've got a game on the books, get it off. I don't care if it's softball, soccer, cross country. If you've got a game on the book with Texas Tech, get it off. Like, is he really worth that? Whatever. Let's set that aside for a moment. This judge, Ken Curry, should have to sit in front of a judge and answer for the ruling that he handed down on Monday. I had somewhat removed the Sorsby thing from my radar because I thought, you know what? Calmer heads prevailed here. Common sense, adults in the room. Obviously, a player who was betting on his own team is not going to come back and play collegiate football. The NCAA made the proper ruling. I figured this was just a nonsense Hail Mary.
Oh, no. Mid Colby crash out. That might be the first time that we've had a Colby crash out and then his internet crashed out, or maybe mine did. I don't know. It's hard to tell, but we'll get Colby back. But no, I mean, he was just getting going there. I think I booted him. That's probably my bad. But we'll get Colby back here in a second. Oh, there he is. He's back. Colby, I apologize. I think that's my system crashing. I'm actually working on a new system here in the next week or two. Hopefully to avoid that happening. But you were just getting going. We had our first Colby crash out where you actually did indeed crash out of the show.
I was just saying. It was off my radar because I figured there's adults in the room. Obviously, the guy who was betting on his own team over and over and over and over and over again is never going to play collegiate athletics again. Sure, go get your help if you've got an addiction, but actions have consequences. He should never play another down of collegiate football. And then this ruling comes down earlier in the week, and Carson, I mean, my head is spinning. I'm thinking like you. I'm like, is everything just legal now across the board? And then I'm angry. So now I'm wondering what else can be done about this. The Big 12 ADs are meeting, and now Ken Paxton, the attorney general from Texas, comes out and says if the Big 12 tells Texas Tech they can't play Sorsby, that the state of Texas is going to sue the Big 12, and they'll be financially liable for anything they can drum up that might have been a problem for Texas Tech as a result of this. And I'm like, to hell with that. The Big 12 bylaws allow you to make a move like that if you feel like something is reflecting poorly on the league. What could reflect more poorly on the league than Texas Tech playing this kid, despite everyone unanimously across the board in college sports agreeing that this is it's beyond bad for the sport? That doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of what is really happening here and how dangerous and how disturbing this can be for college athletics. Carson, I have a lot more I want to say, but I don't want to just monologue for 10 minutes. I'm sure you've got thoughts too. So I'll pause. I'll catch my breath. You can touch on anything. I just went out there.
Yeah, it's really simple. And look, Texas Tech is making the argument that all of this happened before he got there. So that it's not their fault that all this happened way back when. And now they're literally trying to pretend that he should still be eligible to play college football just because it happened at another school, and that they're not, that's not the way this works. You gambling on your own team is the cardinal sin in sports. Just look at Pete Rose, who was a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best baseball players to ever live. He was a pariah. He wasn't allowed in the Hall of Fame. He knew the stakes. He knew the rules. He willingly broke them multiple times, and he was caught, and he did the time. I know they kind of wilted there after he died or whatever, but the point remains. And it doesn't matter what sport you're playing, what level you're playing, if you're found out to be gambling on your own team or gambling at all on your own sport, you're done. There's no questions asked. There's no injunctions. There's no paying off a local judge to do your bidding. And I'm with you, Colby. I do think the Big 12 should make a real statement here. Like you said, if 15 of the 16 schools are against you and the commissioner is clearly probably against you doing this, sorry. Don't embarrass the conference. Don't embarrass the sport of college football. Don't. This would be like the NBA, Colby, telling everyone else that you're wrong. We're going to let Tim Donaghy still officiate NBA basketball games. The guy who admitted to gambling on basketball. That's what Texas Tech's doing. And you know what's even more gross about this, Colby, is mental health is finally something we talk about. It's not something when I was a kid, certainly not something my parents talked about when they were growing up and becoming adults and as adults. It's only a recent thing, and I think it's very important. It's a big deal. I think future generations are going to be way more aware of their mental health and all that comes with it. And so I don't take, and I myself clearly don't take addiction lightly. I'm almost two years now sober. I battled addiction to alcohol. I hate that Texas Tech is hiding behind this. Like Kirby Hokut's statement, trying to like paint this picture that if he doesn't start at quarterback at Texas Tech, then his recovery will be hindered. Like, hey, Kirby, hey, Texas Tech, he doesn't have to play quarterback at your school to become a better person, to work on himself, you guys can help him with that. But he's forfeited his right to play college football. It's that simple.
No doubt about it. And the judge is such a spineless coward. Here was what the court said in an attempt to justify this unconscionable ruling. Said this court finds that the applicant has demonstrated that he will suffer a probable, imminent, and irreparable injury if this court does not issue this temporary injunction because he will be unable to participate as a member of Texas Tech University's 2026 football team, including Texas Tech's 2026 football season, and benefit from elite coaching, all this yada, 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 yada. I'm like, are you telling me that this court has to rule him eligible because otherwise he can't play football and that will be hurtful to him? It's just actions and consequences, Carson. This is basic right wrong. And the level of corruption in the state of Texas. So Ken Curry issues this ruling. I Googled Ken Curry. Again, he's a criminal. He should have to sit in front of a judge and answer for this ruling. I truly believe that. This is such a misinterpretation of any... okay, I'm moving on. Then Ken Paxton issues this statement today. What a dork. I don't even know if he's a Democrat or Republican. Don't care. Dork. The appeal that the NCAA has filed. This is where I was trying to get to. The appeal that the NCAA has filed. It will be heard by the 7th District Court Circuit of Judges. 4 of them on that circuit. Carson, any guesses? Going once, going twice. Where do you think these 4 judges got their law degrees from? Any guesses?
Lubbock, Texas. Texas Tech, Red Raiderville.
Bing, bang, boom! Go, Red Raiders! What are we doing? Like, the level of corruption to get this kid on the field. And Carson, when I talked about all the off the top, is it worth being hated across the board? This is going to extend far past football. If he plays this year, the level of vitriol they are going to receive every time they go on the road is going to be unlike anything we've seen recently in college athletics. I think it'll extend to basketball. I think it'll extend to baseball, softball. I'm going to dislike their golf team. I mean, this is like Texas Tech, to me, if this happens, will become the pariah of collegiate athletics nationally for everyone. They will become public enemy number one, and they will deserve every last bit of it. Like, this is just such a blatant money grab. This is such a blatant, well, we need this guy to play quarterback, so doesn't matter that he bet on sports. This is It's truly unfathomable. And like I said earlier, it's unconscionable. Like, there have to be adults in the room making decisions that make sense. This doesn't make sense. I'm angry about this, Carson. I really am angry about this. The Texas Tech, Brennan Soresby should never play another snap of collegiate football. He just shouldn't.
Well, and I think Texas Tech and Mega Booster Cody Campbell and them realized what you and I had talked about whenever it first came down he was suspended. They realized they're screwed. They put all this money into this quarterback, and if you don't have a quarterback, you're not winning the national championship. They made it to the playoff. Like, they want to win a national championship. They're not just trying to make the Big 12, or they're not just trying to win the Big 12 and make it to the playoff. They're trying to win a title. And they know that's not going to happen without this guy. So they clearly have just – they just do not care. They want to win at all costs. And look, they're doing what they think they got to do to make that happen. And that's – like you said, all those things are true. They're going to be a pariah. They're going to be a villain. Okay, you make your chess move. Here's what needs to happen. The college football playoff, I don't care if they're undefeated. You don't invite them. Like, we have a committee for a reason. The committee can the committee evaluates injuries. You mean to tell me this committee can't evaluate a guy who gambled on his team and should absolutely 1,000% be ineligible per NCAA rules? Yep, sorry. All those wins, we don't count them. He shouldn't have been on the field. I'm serious, Colby. I think the NCAA should not invite any Texas Tech team to maybe you don't extrapolate this to the NCAA men's basketball tournament. I was about to go there, but let's just stick with football. No college football playoff for you. Like, this is the level of move that needs to be countered to Tech running to the Lubbock County judge and getting this injunction. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah, it's a disaster. And I'm looking at their games here just to see who all's coming to town in conference play. And like, I don't think it is totally out of bounds for other schools in the Big 12 to just say, no, we're not playing them. We're not going to do it. This kid doesn't deserve to be out there. Put the onus on the Big 12 and say, look, we're not going to Lubbock. We're not playing this game. You have to decide. Are we forfeiting or are they? You have to decide. Put the onus on the Big 12. Put the onus on Brett Yormark. Brett Yormark has been phenomenal as the Big 12 commissioner. He kept this league alive during conference realignment. He's trying to position this league to be in a good position going forward as the TV contracts expire and different things happen. I'm telling you, this is a career-defining, legacy-defining time for Brett Yormark. The way this is going to look on the conference, I mean, this could be bad, man. I really think that this is a moment for Brett Yormark to stand up and do what's right and tell Ken Paxton, to hell with you, dude. Bring on your lawsuit. The Big 12 bylaws give me the legal right to do this. And just because you've got some judges out in Lubbock that want to say otherwise, sorry. Like, seriously, what is the state of Texas going to do? They're going to bring this lawsuit against the Big 12 and what? Spend a bunch of legal fees? I'm not an attorney, but I read the stories today. I have read probably tens of thousands of words about this at this point, because this is something that has really, really got me deep. Like, I care deeply about what is happening here, because I still care, despite all the reasons that it's giving me not to, I still care deeply about collegiate athletics, because I love my university, and I still want college sports to be able to thrive in this new era where the players are getting a piece of the pie. But now this has just turned into all-out chaos, and I've read so much about this over the last few days. The Big 12 has to be able to tell Ken Paxton and the state of Texas to pound sand, we're not letting Brennan Soresby play football.
Well, based on all the words you've read, I haven't read nearly as much. What's kind of your sense of how Brett Yormark and the college football world in general, like, what are people assuming or predicting is going to happen with this?
There's a whole lot of I don't know. Because of the posturing by Ken Paxton and the lawsuits and everything. Had the Ken Paxton stuff not happened, I really think that Yormark was probably going to be prepared to rule him ineligible and to not let him play. And now I don't know, because the Big 12 has to decide. They're going to talk to their attorneys. You know, I read in one of the stories that, I don't know if it was Yormark said it or somebody from the league office, that they were going to speak to their attorneys and see what they can do here, which makes me think that the Big 12 wants to rule him ineligible. But they have to make sure that they're on solid legal footing to do so that they don't get stuck with a $200 million bill in 3 to 5 years whenever this court case wraps up. You know what else is so corrupt about this, Carson? Did you see when Ken Curry or whoever, did you see when they set the court date for this to actually be resolved?
February, a couple weeks after the playoff, right?
2 weeks after the national championship game. It's just the level of corruption is just beyond anything that is comprehensible in terms of what is right and what is wrong. We're trying to teach young student athletes right and wrong and how to survive and be successful in the world. And what we're teaching them is that there are no rules if you have the right attorney. It's just, it's an absolute joke. It's corruption at the highest level. Ken Curry, I've got no time for you. The district judges, we'll see if they do what's right. Ken Paxton, he's a dork. But both Kens, a couple of Kens, cutting it up, trying to ruin collegiate athletics. Again, Carson, I'm trying, dude. I am trying to hang on to my college sports fandom. And the college sports world is giving me every reason not to. I love college sports. I love Oklahoma State. I don't want to live in a world. Imagine Texas Tech goes 13-0 and makes the playoff. It would be terrible for college football. Imagine Brendan Sorsby, God forbid, leads this team to a national championship. It would be terrible for collegiate athletics. Like, there are no good outcomes, zero good outcomes to Brendan Sorsby taking the field.
Well, in Texas Tech, well, first off, there was a couple of clips going around on Twitter, too, of Sorsby playing quarterback at Cincinnati. Like, threw, like, an interception on, like, the first play of the game, pick six in a game. Like, you can't sit here, like, in Tech's making these arguments that, oh, a lot of these he wasn't even on the field or blood. Like, the dude should not be playing football. There's so much evidence out there. But Texas Tech, Joey McGuire comes out and says it's not like he killed anybody. Cody Campbell's comparing it to, like, he asked how many – he tweeted at Georgia's AD how many people got arrested from the University of Georgia. Like, they're really doubling down and tripling down. And, like, the PR coming out of Lubbock could not be worse. They're making it look so much worse for themselves. And you know what this really reminds me of, Colby? I'm curious if you have had these thoughts too. This situation, this win at all costs, despite how wrong it is, despite breaking rules, despite knowing all of the things that we're doing wrong and going to win at all costs, this reminds me so much of a judge down in Norman, Oklahoma, who said, you know what, Joe Mixon, you broke that girl's face. She's lucky she didn't get killed with her temple hitting that table on the way down as she was unconscious, by the way. Could have killed the girl. And Bob Stoops sold his soul to win two more Big 12 championships because Joe Mixon, absolutely, they do not win two more Big 12 championships without Joe Mixon, and he did. And what happened? They had a local judge down there that buried that tape till, what was it, like a week before the Sugar Bowl it came out? You know, they got to play the whole regular season, and they said, you know what, we'll deal with that when it comes. And that, to me, like you mentioned it earlier, college sports still means something to you. It still means something to me, too. And it just, it goes all over me that people are willing to turn a blind eye to something that heinous and turn a blind eye in the Tech situation to the number one cardinal sin you can do as an athlete. And that's where we are. That's where we are now. Nowadays, you can just break the rules, hire an attorney, and lawyer up. And that, to me, is sad.
Yeah, and it's just, it's totally breaking everything that collegiate athletics is supposed to be. And I know that there's been a lot of that going on, but this is clearly the most glaring example. And just the stuff that they're using in defense, like Joey McGuire, all respect, permanently gone. Cody Campbell, I mean, he's just a big donor anyway. I don't know what he matters in the grand scheme of things, but any amount of respect he ever could have had, gone. The whole university, Kirby Hoka, like all of them, it's just, It's a disaster, Carson, and none of them can ever be looked at the same. It's like you said, they are selling their soul for a chance at a Big 12 championship, a college football playoff berth, potentially a national championship. Like, they are selling their soul, and it's just it's really sad. Like, it really makes me angry. It makes me sad for the sport of college football, and it makes me worried about what the future is going to look like, as you can't turn on any kind of sporting event. You can't go to a sporting event. You can't check any kind of sports app without seeing a FanDuel or a DraftKings or a Kalshi or a Poly Market. Like, you can't log in anywhere without seeing all of those things. And now we've got 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old kids who we're telling, absolutely not, you've got to stay away from it, that you cannot do this. This is the cardinal sin. You can't break this rule. And then one guy in the state of, there's 400 million people in this country. One guy in the state of Texas gets to be like, nah, he can play. He's fine. It's just the whole thing is it's really sad. It's heartbreaking for college sports.
And I tell you, who's probably the most mad at Sorsby when you really think about it, is all the dudes that are going to be playing against him and even the ones playing with him. Because right now, it's never been better to be a college football player. It's never been better to be a college athlete. You have unlimited salary cap and unlimited free agency. And this is going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, and that there'll be real reform around these college athletes just getting paid whatever they want and leaving whatever school, whatever they want. Like, they've got a great deal going right now, and this guy's going to screw it up for everybody. So if I'm a D tackle making $2 million a year, I'm hitting him late and saying, what the hell are you doing, dude? You're ruining this for everybody. Like, you're an idiot. Like, go play in the NFL. The NFL will take you. Maybe. Maybe they won't. Who knows?
Yeah, I wonder if we can find prop bets on the over-under for opposing team unnecessary roughness penalties going into each week for Texas Tech games. It's just, again, Carson, like I said 10 minutes ago, there are no good outcomes. There are no good outcomes, even for Texas Tech. Even if you win the football games, you're a villain unlike anything that we will have seen in modern collegiate athletics. Like, other teams have been villainous because of on-the-field stuff, or, like you mentioned, the Joe Mixon thing. Like, there have been other things that have made teams villainous. Like, just absolutely turning a blind eye to what is right and doing what is so clearly wrong, and just spitting in everyone's face along the way about how, well, we've got to support this kid, so he has to play quarterback. No. Actions. Consequences. But I guess they don't believe in that in Lubbock,
no,
Texas.
No, and it's wild. This is all, like, coming back to me. I remember when the Mixon thing happened. And look, Mike Gundy's not faultless with player discipline. I think the Chris Collins thing was a big deal his first or second year. But I'll give Mike a ton of credit in that Tyreek Hill just beat Oklahoma, was clearly an absolute difference maker on the football field. And Mike Gundy didn't even wait for a judicial process to play out. The situation happened with Tyreek Hill's girlfriend. Boom, you're gone. See you later. Never going to see you again in Stillwater. Bye. And when the Mixon thing happened, I had all these OU fans saying, well, it'll do him better to – it. What good would it do for him to just go transfer to some small school somewhere? I go, go look at Tyreek Hill. He's having to walk to campus at North Alabama and think about how in the hell he got there. How did I end up in this hellhole of a school in the middle of nowhere walking to class to take this class I don't want to take? He had to really sit there and think about his actions. And if Brendan Sorsby had to sit out this year and miss this huge opportunity he has in front of him with Texas Tech, I think that would do him some good, because kids need discipline. They need consequences. And I say all that about Mike Gundy and Tyreek Hill because I have this on the rundown. We all know OSU has cooperated over the years with the NCAA, Colby, and we all know where that's gotten them. You think of basketball, you think of just all the issues. I got so many to think of, but if I were to grant you one Sorsby for OSU, where OSU would just lawyer up and tell the NCAA to stick it where the sun don't shine, what comes to mind for you?
We're probably going to have the same one. It's probably the same one that just popped into the minds of all the listeners. Carson, look, Whedon and Blackman came along after, but I was born in 1992. So by the time 2005, 6, 7 rolled around, I have never had more fun watching anyone play football than I had watching Dez Bryant play football. I mean, I was 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, something like that, whenever Dez was coming through Oklahoma State. He was unbelievable. He looked like a god amongst mortals on that field. He was just amazing. I couldn't believe what I was watching when Dez Bryant took the field. And he goes and has dinner with Dion, and he misses a calendar year. Brendan Sorsby will face zero consequences unless the
games.
Seventh district. Oh, yeah, my bad. Thank you. That's a good correction. He will miss two games. He will face big consequences for what he did unless the Seventh Circuit Court does the right thing. And Dez Bryant was suspended a calendar year because he had dinner with Dion. I would have fully supported Oklahoma State in that instance because Dez didn't do anything wrong, I would have fully supported Oklahoma State lawyering up and telling the NCAA, absolutely no chance Dez Bryant sitting out for a calendar year. It ended his college football career.
They should have, because the thing that just drove me and everyone else up a wall is he didn't break an NCAA rule. He essentially, and I don't know how this played out. I think Dez spoke about it at some point. There was one point where Dez and I were like tweeting at each other and DMing each other about this exact situation. Maybe I can go to my old DMs and pull it back up for old time's sake. But
we need to get Dez on the show. I think Dez is just crazy enough. He might do it.
He might. And the situation, I think, that played out was this rando dork, as you would call, from the NCAA. This white dude just corners him and asks, "Hey, did you do this with did you do this with Deion? Did you do that?" "No, man, no, I didn't do any of that." Like, just what do kids do when they think they're in trouble? They lie. And he didn't even break a rule. Like, he should have just said, "Hell yeah, I hang out with Deion. Deion's awesome. What of it?" But the fact that he quote unquote lied to someone who's questioning him, who doesn't know and doesn't understand what the ramifications of what he says will be, that was just the most insane, ridiculous suspension ever. Like, Johnny Manziel gets caught selling autographs and got less time than Dez got suspended. I think it was after like the third game that year. He missed the remaining nine games. They had played Georgia that year. They did lose to Houston after the great Georgia win, but that one's insane. That's clearly number one. Another one I think that's lost to time, and baseball's not nearly as big a deal at OSU as it once was. But I don't know if you remember this, Colby. I was early in my TV tenure. OSU was hosting a regional in Stillwater in baseball, and Andrew Oliver was their number one ace starter, awesome pitcher, All-American. The NCAA comes out, like, there was some agent that had an axe to grind with him and alleged a few things, and they had to sit him. They couldn't play him for eligibility concerns. And I think it might have ended his career. I should have researched this before I brought it up, but that's a great one. Of course, we all know the Mike Boynton or the Lamont Evans situation, the $300 handshake that they gave back, that they got a worse penalty than just about every other basketball school that's done way worse. So OSU should have lawyered up a long time ago for far less transgressions than what Texas Tech's doing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I don't think the public sentiment around Dez would have been what it is around Sorsby. By the way, I don't know much about Brennan Sorsby outside of all this stuff. I hope he's got some serious mental fortitude, because I don't know if he's fully prepared for the hatred that's going to come his way come college football season if he takes those snaps. Like, I think there's real questions. I think there's real questions about whether it's good for this young man to be put in that position. Like, go into the supplemental draft, try to make an NFL roster, go play in the UFL, whatever. But to put him out on a college football field with student sections, and Texas Tech's going to be winning the majority of those games, like, whoo, buddy. I don't know that we're...
Oh, no. We lost Colby again. I'm not sure what happened there. But, no, I agree with Colby. And, like, look, I was at the Baker Mayfield return game in Lubbock when he came back as a Sooner, and they were chanting FU Baker throughout the entirety of that game. I think that's what it's going to be for Mr. Sorsby, just about every stadium he walks into. I think we're trying to get Colby back here, but... Colby, you're back. I was comparing the Texas Tech return game for Baker Mayfield to what Sorsby's going to be walking into. I was at that stadium when there's chanting FU Baker left and right. So I totally agree with you. But it's a bad situation. I'm hopeful that justice will prevail in this, because I think there's just too much at stake. That's kind of my thoughts on it. Like, there's way too much at stake for everyone in college football and college athletics to just let this guy play the rest of the year. So maybe that's just my optimism speaking.
I still hope that something happens that keeps this from going forward, whether it is the Big 12 taking a stand, whether it's just, even if the conference can't do it, whether it's the other schools in the conference just saying, no, we're not going to play them, it's not happening, whether it is this appeal with this district circuit court judges doing the right thing. I find that highly unlikely. Again, as I mentioned off the top, all four law degrees from Texas Tech. It's just corruption at the highest order. Yeah, again, if this goes forward, Texas Tech, they will be hated and known for this forever.
Yep, for sure. I brought up Terry Don Phillips, kind of one of the pioneers of Oklahoma State athletics and certainly the football program as well. Another pioneer is Bob Simmons. Unfortunately, he has passed away at the age of 77. Really an important figure, Colby. A little bit before your time, I was very young when he was the coach. He coached there for 6 years from 1995 to 2000 when Eddie really was getting things rolling in basketball. Took them to the Alamo Bowl after a 9-year postseason absence. Really since from 88 on, OSU got in some NCAA trouble, speaking of the NCAA. They were pretty much a dead football program till Bob Simmons came along. And he started recruiting dudes. He got R.W. McCorders to come to Stillwater. He was a very highly touted recruit. He was the 20th coach in program history. He only had one winning season, but it was a really important one for a lot of people. They went 8-4. They were second in the Big 12 South that year. They lost to Purdue in the Alamo Bowl. But 30,000 fans from Oklahoma State went to San Antonio, one of whom was from Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Chris Norris was a longtime OSU fan. He owned Chris's University Spirit during that time. His apparel shop couldn't keep up with merchandise orders during the month leading up to the game. Typically Thanksgiving to Christmas period. This is from the Tulsa World article from Eric Bailey, I believe. Really good story here. They quote Chris saying, "We were so starved for football because our last success was 1988, and you know we'd been probably what it would have been 9 football seasons. We finally got over the hump. It was awesome. The announcement probably came out in late November that we were going. Back in those days, things were just done a little different, and the excitement was off the charts. It rivaled the Final Four in 1995." And so they go on to just say just, you know, what that did for them. And he recruited Colby. Again, Chris University Spirit, sponsor of the show, has been for a long time. Really cool to hear from Chris Norris there. He recruited memorable names such as Alonzo Mays, Sam Mays, Kevin Williams, Rashawn Woods. His 1997 team includes 8 players who were named All Big 12. And Gary Calgano, Calcagno, I can't remember say his last name, but the old strength and conditioning guy had been around there for a long time, says he was a phenomenal evaluator of talent, but he was also extremely good at assessing coaching talent. So really, Colby, just a guy who was very important. He beat Oklahoma 3 times. We talk so much about Les Miles beating Oklahoma twice. There's some sliding skill there because, of course, Les beat OU at the peak of their powers with Bob Stoops. Bob Simmons was beaten up on Howard Schnellenberger and John Blake. But hey, 12-0, beating the Sooners 12-0 down in Norman. They made bumper stickers out of it. It was that big a deal, Colby. Just, I think, along with Terry Don Phillips, Bob Simmons made Oklahoma State a respectable football program again. That's probably the best way to put it. Recruited really good players, took them to a bowl game, and really just kind of put OSU football back to respectability is what I remember most about him.
Yeah, and you mentioned being a pioneer. It was a groundbreaking hire. His first year at Oklahoma State was the last year of the Big 8 Conference. He was hired in December of 1994. And, Carson, I was surprised to read that to that point there had not been a black head coach in the Big 8 Conference. He was the first one in the last year of the Big 8. And like you said, what he did against Oklahoma, he was 3-3 against OU. He beat them back-to-back in 97 and 98 and really got some football mojo, some football magic going in Stillwater for the first time since 1988. I thought R.W. McCorders had really nice quotes. He said, "Coach Simmons was a fair and fatherly coach. He took over an OSU program that had struggled in previous years, but in his first year, his recruiting class was amazing. We had no problem beating OU during his career. He will be missed and always loved, as will his family. His players had nothing but nice things to say about him." And, yeah, look, it was a tough period for Oklahoma State after 1988, after kind of the golden era with Gundy and Hart Lee and obviously Barry and Thurman. And then you move forward and suddenly it's 0-10-1 and it's NCAA stuff. And it's just this grind, the dog days of the 90s. And Bob Simmons, I think, brought some life to the Oklahoma State program. Before he got there, Oklahoma State, what was it, a 19-season drought of not beating Oklahoma? Oklahoma, and he goes 3-3 against OU, and then that transitions into Les Miles beating Oklahoma. And, you know, we know Mike Gundy got him a few times, not as many as we would have liked, and now hopefully we don't see him again, or if we do, Eric Morris can lead that tradition. But, yeah, it's just Bob Simmons was – he was special for what it meant to Oklahoma State, for what it meant to the Big Eight, for what it meant to college football, and I loved reading what his players had to say about him.
Yeah, I always tell the story, Colby, about that year they went to the Alamo Bowl. Like, I'll never forget it. I can transform my brain right now back to Moreland, Oklahoma, where my dad grew up, sitting in my grandparents' house and watching, I think it was either College Football Live or Sports Center, one of the shows on ESPN, and they showed Oklahoma State helmet with a number 21 next to it. I was like, whoa. They've got a number next to their name. This is huge. We're like,
yeah,
we're big time. We got number 21 next to it. Like, it literally was that unheard of for young 10, 11-year-old Carson for us to be ranked in football. Like, it was like a huge deal. And then going to a bowl game, that felt like the Super Bowl. They said in this, again, Eric Bailey, tremendous article on the Tulsa World. Everyone should go read it. They were saying, I can't remember who said the quote here. Maybe it was Bob himself. Maybe it was Bob Simmons himself. I can't find it. But he said, if I could ever start a program from scratch, the colors will be orange because they just took over the stadium. He's like, Purdue's black and gold. That doesn't really take over a stadium. It kind of just blends in. He's like, you saw every fan that OSU had, and it was 2/3 of the stadium. That's how excited Oklahoma State people were to go to a bowl game. That's just how far we've come now, Colby. Like, bowls just aren't the ticket anymore. We've come a really long way, and I think – figures like that deserve to be recognized because Mike Gundy did not step into the role he had with that stadium and the support that he had without Bob Simmons doing the level of job he did. And it's important that you brought that up. I remembered that statistic, but I'd kind of forgotten it before the show about him being the first African-American coach in the Big Eight. My dad brought this up at the time. I always remember this. He's like, Carson, oh, he was trying to copy us now. They hired – we had Rob Ryan as our defensive coordinator. They hired Rex Ryan, and it opened a door for John Blake. I mean, John Blake didn't work out at Oklahoma, but it opened up the door for another African-American coach to get a head coaching job. My dad was enjoying finally beating OU for the first time. They hired a Ryan on defense, Carson. They're trying to copy us now. they're trying to copy our success because, like, that was the kind of the hallmark of some of those great Simmons teams was defense. But yeah, so rest in peace to Bob Simmons. Really an important figure in OSU lore. I didn't bring this up on the last show, Colby, but it's worth mentioning. Bill Haston wrote an article about the baseball program, and, you know, a lot of talk about Josh Holliday and his program, where it stands. Well, there needs to be context here about – we discussed all the injuries. We provided all that context. He goes into a great deal in this article about all the injuries. But Bill Haston points out that the NCAA increased the scholarship limits from 11.7 to 34. And in the Big 12, for example, Arizona State had 34 scholarship baseball players this season. Oklahoma State's scholarship total was 13. There are SEC programs with current roster revenue amounting to at least $4 million, and it's believed OSU's is around $400,000. So their payroll in baseball is ranked in the lower half of the Big 12. And Josh Holliday, like, I always enjoy his candor. He says, quote, I'm always going to be grateful for everything we have. I'm sure he means Obrate and all the facilities. He says, but if we're looking for facts for the reporting of news, those are the facts, meaning the scholarship limits and the salary cap limits. So I don't have a great take on it, Colby, other than I think, you know, we've talked so much about all the funding that's available for football, all the funding that seems to be there for basketball. I think that hurts the pocketbooks of other sports. It's a trickle down effect, right? I think that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah, I mean, Carson, at some point, the well is not infinite, right? And my take is the most boring take that there is, which is it is what it is. You know, it's college basketball. Great freshman class coming in, pretty good portal class coming in. Women's basketball, the best portal class in the country, brought in everybody they wanted. Football, went out and got everybody they wanted, fired the whole staff, spent $25 million there. Spent a whole bunch more million, tens more million to get everybody in from North Texas and around the country to fill out that roster. golf. You know, they've kept their golf roster together now for years at a time. And, like, all these sports have money coming in from different places. And, I mean, I guess there's no big donor that's ready to hand over millions of dollars a year to baseball. And it just kind of is what it is. And all that being said, this team popped its head into the top 25 toward the end of the season. Again, they crashed out. They lost SC Upstate in the first round of the regional, kind of doomed them. The wrist injury to Aiden Miola the day before the wrist injury, we talked about all that last week, kind of doomed them. But, you know, it is what it is. If the money's not there, then Coach Holliday is going to have to work with what he's got. And I think that, you know, you heard – I have takes. You have sources. You've had sources in Stillwater saying that Josh Holliday's seat was never really hot and that he's on pretty firm footing. And look, I get it. If this is all true and this is the case about his resources and what he's working with, I'm sure they would love to provide him with more resources. But if this is what it is, then I think he's going to have to do what we saw Mike Gundy do for a long time, which is go out and find 2 stars and 3 stars and develop them and turn them into 4 stars and 5 stars and try to win that way. Can you do it that way? Sure. Is it harder to do it that way in an era where schools can come in and take your best players every year with more money? Absolutely it is. So kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, bit of a catch 22, if I can throw a couple of axioms at you back to back. But, yeah, it is what it is. I feel for Josh, and I hope that without taking away resources from other sports, baseball can get what it needs to truly be competitive, because it's fun when they are competitive. I didn't even mention wrestling. You know, wrestling's got a big donor by the name of Chad Richardson. We all know that. Like, there's money flowing, it seems like, everywhere except baseball. And if you're the odd man out, you're the odd man out.
Yeah, and, like, there's a lot of calculus going on in Stillwater. I mean, you look at the Obrate Stadium and how sparkling those facilities are, and you just look at the softball stadium and how old and decrepit and small those facilities are. That's not great. That's not equal, and that's what Title IX exists for. So there's some – it's – money's tight, man. And I think Josh even mentioned about transfers, like, those are expensive, and that hasn't worked out for a lot of schools too. So that's not always the answer. And I think, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I didn't mean to cut you off mid thought. I was just going to say, if the school wants to up some revenue, then they should have some conversations with Coach Morris. They should have some conversations with everybody, you know, Steve Lutz, and they should start to really wager heavy on some player props that they are in control of, and try to make some money. Since it's legal now, we can just bet on our teams. I mean, let's just throw some money at some player props, and then we can fund the softball stadium. We can fund the baseball NIL. We can do it all. Player props, right, Ken Curry? Right, Ken Paxton? Right, Herbie Cocut? Right, Joey McGuire? Right, Cody Campbell? I'm still angry about it, Carson.
You're joking, but you're kind of not, because you can now do that, technically. I mean, if you really want to, if you really want to push the envelope like Tech Edge, you could literally do that, it seems.
I thought I got it all out of my system earlier, but I'm still angry about it, and I needed to get another jab in there.
Well, here's where I feel for Josh. And yes, I have heard that his seat, I've been hearing that for a while. I've said that on the show, that his seat was not that hot. And I think you put two and two together with those numbers. I think his bosses understand why, you know, especially, like, I know injuries are quote unquote an excuse, but you're not going to go to a super regional with that many injuries. And they almost did. Like, they put up a good fight in the regional, but where I really
I can't believe Miola broke his wrist the day before the regional started. I can't believe that.
What was he doing? I don't know, man. That's,
I don't even know. I don't know, but it's the worst luck ever.
Well, and where it's more difficult for Josh Holliday, he could go get the best recruiting class in the country. Well, and in baseball, those guys just go to the major leagues. They're all drafted. All the best high school baseball players go to the draft and go start their profession. Like, it's just hard to go the recruiting route. That's where I think OSU is going to make a lot of their bread and butter moving forward, is recruiting people out of high school and retaining them. That's going to be, like, their number one talent generator. And in baseball, it's hard to do that. So, but that's a startling number. I'm not sure why the scholarship number would be that way for him, but clearly that needs to increase moving forward. So, all right, Colby, golf school goodbye. What do you got for us? We got 1 week till the U.S. Open. That's a week from today. We got a lot of dudes who have qualified. Eugenio Chikara just tearing it up on the DP World Tour, rocking the swinging Pete hat too. never graduate. I love the look, Shakara. Well done. Still rocking Swinging Pete over there in DP world. But not really feeling our OSU Cowboy. Wyndham Clark, are you going to claim him yet? He's getting hot at the right time again. He's just tearing it up. He's an OSU guy. He was there four of his 5 years of college. We got to claim him, right, if we want another major champ.
Yeah, look, I've come around on the Wyndham Clark stuff, especially because when he won in Texas a few weeks ago, I don't know if you saw the video of him putting on the cowboy hat and then asking him if he's worn a cowboy hat. He's like, dude, I went to Oklahoma State. Go Pokes. And I'm like, all right, he considers himself one of us. I think that's fine. He was there for a long time. Like I've told you this before, one of my best friends freshman year lived, I think it was Booker Hall, maybe? And Wyndham Clark had the room like right next to his. So we would see Wyndham all the time coming in with his golf clubs and all of his Swinging Pete gear and all this stuff. And I'm like, I don't know who this kid is, but that's cool to see all that. I'm fine with that. I don't think any of the Oklahoma State guys can compete to win a U.S. Open at Shinnecock. The level of control you're going to have at that golf course, it's just – Ricky's game's not there. Vic's game's not there. You know whose game might be closest right now of the Oklahoma State guys? Take a guess as to who I'm fixing to say.
Closest of the OSU guys. Not Shakara.
Over the last 6 weeks, who on tour?
Oh, Zach Bushu's tearing it up.
That's a good guess. He's had a good few weeks.
That's not it? Who are you talking about?
Alex Noren has gotten white hot with his irons over the last month. Like, he is controlling his golf ball. He's a veteran. Shinnecock, it's not a course you're going to have to overpower. It's going to be a placement golf course. If you're in the wrong side of the fairway, it makes it an easier tee shot but a harder approach. If you take on the harder tee shot, you potentially bring more trouble into play. But if you pull it off, you get the easier approach. It's just these greens are diabolical. If you wanted me to throw an Oklahoma State name at you, give me Noren as the dark horse.
Okay, I like it. Why do we not associate – oh, no, we lost Colby again. That's the third time on this show. That's not great. I was going to ask Colby about Noren, but Zach Boshu, out of nowhere, has started to play really well. It took him a while to even get opportunities to play on the PGA Tour, but his name has been on the leaderboard a lot lately. Maybe it was that YouTube bump that he got from doing the challenge against the 2018 team against the 2025 team. Maybe that was the boost he needed. But Victor Hovland not playing that well. But yeah, Noren's a good golfer. We don't really associate him with Oklahoma State as much, Colby. I mean, Alex Noren, he's kind of like a little bit before both of our times. Like, he played at OSU before you and I were really up there following. Like, he's an older guy. I've never really seen him talk about OSU or wear orange. Like, he's always the forgotten man when it comes to OSU golfers.
If he wins the U.S. Open, he won't be. He won't be the forgotten man at all. Well,
he's not.
I'll
he's not doing
Sunday
that.
Night.
He's not doing that.
Oh, I know. I know. He's not going to win the U.S. Open. But he's playing good golf. I'd love to see Ricky or Victor make some noise and be up there on the leaderboard on the weekend, but.
Ricky shot 79 last week.
Yeah, I just don't know that it's in the cards for
no longer
one of
trending.
Right now. By the way, we forgot to mention Carson.
Or Stout and Fang qualified, didn't he?
Stout's in for sure, and yeah, I think Fang is still in off his British Am win last summer. I think that got him into the Masters and the U.S. Open, and then Stout's in for winning the national championship. So we'll definitely have to keep an eye on the Ams. I would guess at Shinnecock, neither of those guys are making the cut just because, I mean, what a golf course. If you're a golf nerd, you have to love Shinnecock Hills. It's an unbelievable place. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, put it out on Twitter and overlaid the fairways from 2004 onto the fairways from 2018 and how much more narrow they were in 2004. It was absolutely disgusting. But Carson, I forgot to mention, you know, we were talking about the echo chamber that College Sports is right now about the Brendan Sorsby issue, but we didn't talk about echo contracting. Echo Contracting is a proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high-quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. You can just email them and tell them that you're mad about Brendan Sorsby and that you can't wait to get to Boone Pickens Stadium. And boo him. Although we play them in Tech this year, don't we? Don't we go down there?
Sounds right. Oh, Eric Lee qualified for the U.S. Open. That's who I was thinking of. He qualified through qualifying. So they got three youngins there.
Okay, I just pulled it up. Texas Tech comes to Stillwater Saturday, November 14th. Woo, buddy, I am going to be there, and it is going to be I might not be able to take my daughter to that game. There are going to be some adults throwing around some very adult language that night, I would imagine.
If I were a betting man, I would wager that he doesn't play in that game. That's just my gut instinct on June 11th that I don't think he makes it to Stillwater. Either the NCAA or the courts intervene, or he gambles his $5 million to the wrong people and is locked up in jail somewhere. Like, that is not – I can't envision him playing out the entire season. Defensive tackle sits on his head and injures him, hits him late. Like, something – he ain't walking in that door in Stillwater to play quarterback. That's just my prediction on June 11th.
We'll see. If he does, I'll be there. And I'll be booing. I'll have my boo birds ready.
Well, they're going to have all the PA systems playing all the songs to go with it, all the money songs. And
yeah,
oh, that'll be like you said it, man, that'll be a cauldron everywhere he goes, because he's gonna be persona non grata nationwide. Mark it down. And it couldn't happen to a nicer institution. If any OSU fans ever been to Lubbock and had to deal with the horrendous behavior of Texas Tech fans, and I know this might end up in their queue, they might see this at some point, I don't care.
Who cares?
You guys are trash. They literally threw so much trash on the field during that Baker Mayfield game. They could barely even like walk on the sidelines. It was disgusting. They throw batteries at people.
Here's my hot take. If Brendan Sorsby plays this season, at some point, student sections are going to throw things. And the Texas Tech fans are going to be up in arms, and it's going to be hypocrisy at its finest, because no one nationally across the country is more known for throwing things than Texas Tech fans.
Batteries, tortillas, you name it. Maybe they'll hit him in the head with an egg like Wembanyama got hit over the head with an egg from the New York fans. That was hilarious. Did you see that clip?
I saw that it barely missed. Was what I saw. And the reasonable person in me said, guys, let's not throw eggs at the players as they're walking into the hotel. And then there was this other little guy on my other shoulder that was like, man, that was satisfying. And I really, really don't like that person as a basketball player. And I don't really think that I like what he's about as a person either. I just saw a highlight of the OG play a second ago. It's one of the best plays in the history of the game. It's one of the best plays in the history of the game. That dude is an absolute freak athlete. And to have the grace to tip that in, Carson, he was not at the rim. It wasn't like he tipped this ball 4 inches forward over to the basket. He was 12 feet in the air, reached back behind him with the touch from like 6 feet away to tip this thing in. Patrick Ewing couldn't get a finger roll in from right in front of the rim, but OG tips that in from 6 feet out. It's one of the most unbelievable things in one of the most unbelievable moments in one of the most unbelievable atmospheres in one of the most unbelievable games I've ever seen.
And his head was like at the top of the square above the rim.
It was insane.
Like, to be moving that fast and have that touch. It's one of the most, like, I was listening to, who was it? Windhorst and Tim McMahon, their podcast, and Tim Bontemps.
They're so good.
And they really like nailed it in that. Like, that's one of the more improbable, like Tim Bontemps, I think, said, that's one of the most improbable plays you'll ever see. How fast he was going, like you said, he didn't have to bank it off the glass. He just literally lightly tapped. Like, one of the most improbable plays ever. Crazy. And I'm so happy that the Spurs are playing the New York Knicks and not the Indiana Pacers or, you know, some other mid-market team, because Wembanyama is getting the wrath of New York. All the media is watching this. The whole, you know, all the liberals up there in New York are all seeing what we all saw, that Wembanyama's a total fraud. He puts up this total front on his press conferences, tries to, like, this curated quotes that he comes up with, this curated persona he's trying to do. His true colors always come out. And I thought it was just so poetic and so karmic that he missed the two free throws and that he has drawn the wrath of New York and as a byproduct, the greater NBA. Because coming out of that Thunder series, everyone hated the Thunder and they were happy for Wembanyama. Well, you maintained all along that it's gonna shift. Well, bravo to you, because I don't think it could shift any harder than it already has.
I've been weirdly right about the Knicks all year. In February and March, as Boston was gaining steam and everybody's bailing and going to Boston, I've got receipts. I never wavered. I said the Knicks are going to the finals. I had Thunder over Knicks in the finals, and I think that's what it would have been if the Thunder were fully healthy. I still believe that. I told you 2-3 weeks ago, I think the Spurs were the third best team in the world if everybody's fully healthy. I still believe that. I think the Thunder fully healthy would be the best team in the world, and then the Knicks, and then the Spurs. I said Knicks in six. I still feel pretty good about Knicks in six. I don't know if this is how I thought we would get there, with the Spurs leading all four games by double digits after the first quarter and losing three of them. The Knicks are up 3-1 and the point differential is +8 in the series. It's what we saw last night was pretty unbelievable. I had a funny thought a minute ago too. If anyone at home plays Carson and Colby bingo, we always find ways to circle back to, like, talking about these athletes that we really dislike. If we can just do, like, 3 minutes on Bryson DeChambeau before the end of the show, I think somebody might get bingo.
Yeah. We didn't rip Mike Gundy this show.
I half-heartedly talked about his Bedlam record.
Yeah, we kind of hinted at it, I guess. So maybe that we'll give that a half square. Maybe that's the free square. All right, Colby, I'm spent. Good talking to you. Have a great weekend. And I'm going on a trip next week, so we'll have to work out scheduling and all that. But the dog days are here. And, again, Bob Simmons deserves a ton of credit for what he did at Oklahoma State. I wanted to make that a point on this show. Really sad to hear about his passing. Kind of a guy from my youth that really made me care about OSU football in a way that I hadn't before. So, thoughts with his family and as in their time of difficulty there. And Colby, I appreciate you. You've been dead on about the NBA. Hopefully you're dead on about this Sorsby stuff and he doesn't play next year, but we'll see. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, we'll see. Crazy times. Great stuff. Carson, appreciate everyone joining, watching, listening. As always, go Pokes!